Hey guys, welcome to Generation Dry. I'm Kayla.
And I'm Leah. Let's jump in.
Okay.
Okay, so I think this is important to talk about. You wrote an article that was kind of a counter to the article that we spoke about last week. And this was on Psychology Today. And for anybody who didn't listen to last week's episode, we were talking about an article that kind of went viral. And I think a large part of its virality was due to its headline, which is "The Rise of the Lonely Single Male."
So
why don't you tell them a little bit about what you wrote and the feedback you got?
I should have known better. So the article, for hopefully y'all listened, we don't have to go into detail, but it's essentially saying, you know, there are more single men than single women. Men need to learn the skills, address their mental health, and, like, you know, do X, Y, and Z. And, like, pretty, he at the end says, like, we need to step up as men. And it was very, it wasn't like this, the psychologist that wrote it is a man. And I, like, went on his social media. He does a lot of, like, healthy relationship work. Like, he's very much, it's not like anti-male. It was very much like, this is what we need to do in order to find ourselves in relationships again and, like, have these healthy relationships. And I think that the title of the article or the blog post was what caused, like you said, it to go viral. And I think a lot of people aren't reading it. That's the first thing. Like, even you and I, we hadn't read it, like, completely. And we're like, oh my God, we had skimmed it. So then I read it, and it's really very reasonable. Like, it's nothing that's
And it's short too.
It's short. So, it's not like men are terrible, we're awful, like, fuck the patriarchy. It was nothing like that. It was just like, hey, like, something's got to give. We got to switch things up. These are some things that we can work on as the male species. Like, this is it. My counter, which wasn't even a counter, I pretty much wanted to say what I said was in, like, two sentences was, yes, because he was also saying a lot of this has to do with dating apps, and that's why men are still single. So my response was, I love that we're addressing this culture shift and that women don't need men in the same way, but want partners. And these are the things and qualities that women want, which was very basic. And it was like, essentially, we want to be treated with respect. We want to be
correct.
We want to have honest and productive conversations. We want to have multiple identities outside of mom or wife or caregiver. We want to mutually negotiate our roles in this dynamic. Again, because I think you and I talked about, if someone wants to be a stay-at-home parent or do all the things that, like, as a, like, a kind of like a homemaker, like, that's fine, but you have to be on board. Like, it has to be mutually agreed upon, right? The article is not by any means hating on men, but I think people now think I'm this, like, man hater. But I also, I think they're not reading it, because I think then my title is The Rise of Empowered Single Women, and then the byline was what women want from the lonely single male, essentially. Lonely single men. Which, I mean, there's something to be said about, like, using that clickbait, right?
It was obviously clickbait.
Right. So the content itself, though, really was not anything crazy. It wasn't anything new, but people were not thrilled. And I shared with you that I got some nasty emails, one of which was, I shouldn't have done this. I checked my email. I woke up. It was just hot. It's hot here. Woke up 3:00 in the morning. I checked my email, and it was this nasty message from this guy. I'm assuming it's a male, but I mean, it might not be. And essentially it was said, and I deleted it, now I can't find it, which is probably good, because I'd ruminate. It was like, you're going to die alone. Essentially was it said, like, you're going to be alone for the rest of your life. Nobody wants you. All the women not having babies in their 20s will pay for it. And it was very, like, what is it? Ominous, right? It's very like cryptic and threatening and, like, gross. And it was jarring at 3:00 in the morning.
I guess we're fucked.
I mean, it was just really, I think what was really disturbing is, like, I don't know. And then on Twitter, people responded, like, there was this woman who was like, you feminist, like, shut, you know, shut the front door. Like, there were some responses that were not great, that were very, people were clearly activated. And I have a couple thoughts on this. I feel like the title can be activating and is not fair to men. Cause like, men aren't evil. Like, not all men are evil. No. My dad, I know wonderful men. I work with men. I work with all genders and non-binary folks. Like, I'm not like only pro female, but I think this activated lots of people. And I don't know. It's just funny because I was like, I even sent it to my dad. I was like, can you read this? Is it like, am I like being a man hater? Like, what is going on with these responses? He's like, I thought it was great. And I was like, I mean, it wasn't like I was, I know.
I think just.
Did you read it?
Yeah. And I think what you said that we as women are asking for is not even just reasonable. It's like the bare minimum. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'd like to be like valued and like respected and looked at as an equal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but the thing is, where we're coming from as second class citizens, which we still are, mm-hmm. I think for the men and the women who grew up with traditional roles being idolized and respected, and that's, you know, how they grew up and what they're expecting for themselves. I think it's like anything, right? Like religion,
right?
Or your personal culture. And in America itself, like, we have so many subcultures within one big culture, right? So not to call any specific state out or anything like that, but, you know, it's different when we're in California and it's a lot different out here when I'm in Ohio.
Right.
Like, the way that people think is different.
Right.
The majority of political views is different. Just, you know,
world views.
Traditions are different. Yeah. It's just different. It's not bad. It's not right or wrong. It's just different. Mm-hmm. And when I think of somebody getting activated or triggered, you know, whatever you want to call it, it just reminds me of what I was taught in like early sobriety, which is basically, you know, if you're being triggered by something, like especially like another person or something somebody's saying, before reacting, try and ask yourself, like, why is this bothering me?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think in general, we as people just have such a natural inclination to react rather than like pause and respond and think about, because somebody also commented on your Instagram post and I had to pause and I was like, ooh, I really want to like troll the troll. But then I was like, this is pointless. Like, it's only going to make me mad. And like, I did the same thing when we created a TikTok now for Join Soberish.
Yeah.
I'm not running it because I literally can't stand it. And I'm already going to have to be doing the TikTok for this new job I'm consulting for. Mm-hmm. My TikTok manager, she showed me, because one of our videos went viral already. It has like 100,000 views. But of course, it's a controversial topic. So just the amount of trolls, and I did find myself like going into it, right? Like at one point, and I didn't say anything mean or, you know, like what I wanted to.
Yeah.
But even just realizing like people like that are not open to what you're saying.
No.
So even responding, it's you're talking to a wall.
Right.
And I think it's so hard to not react.
I know.
And it's not as satisfying. But it's the instant gratification that we're always looking for, I think, especially as Americans that we're used to. So this is kind of off point, but to bring it back to like what we were talking about and why I wanted to bring it up, that email you got reminded me, and did you, I don't know if you thought of it, but when I was texting you earlier, there's a group of people online. What is the acronym, or what is the group name?
It's like, what, incels, involuntary celibates.
Yes. Yes. That reminded me of that. And then that reminded me of like the UC Santa Barbara shooter.
And I went there, and this was like 3 years after I had graduated, and it was maybe three.
Were you in a sorority?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it was like I would do.
Right. Right.
But not, and not that we're talking specifically about incels, but I think it ties in because there's, once again, not pigeonholing men. I think I'm pigeonholing people like this.
Right.
Who have like sociopathic tendencies, narcissistic tendencies, like there's something wrong with them and the way they treat other people.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of like, what bothers me the most, I think, is the idea that somebody sent you an email saying all of that stuff. And well, first of all, the fact that they just sent it, right? But but the fact that they believe that, mm-hmm. and they believe that they have any, I don't know how to word this.
Like that they're, like, they have the authority to send an email condemning me.
Yeah, like, I think that's really it. Because, like, when I was watching the video of the shooter, like, when he did that video, like, not only was it just, like, soul, like, shivering, but, yeah, it's just this idea that I've met a couple of men like this, and I've dated a man like this, where they just think they're entitled. Like, it's the entitlement, like, genuine entitlement that what they're doing or how they're acting is how it should be. Like, how dare you not do what I ask? How dare you not talk to me? How dare you not? Or it's like, it's the simple, like, I feel like so many of us women have gotten it. It's a simple, you know, you get hit on at a bar and you're like, no, thanks, I'm good. Or I'm dating somebody and they're like, well, fuck you anyways, like, bitch. And you're like, whoa, what the fuck? Like,
it's like the nice guys where they're like, nobody likes us nice guys. And they're like, fuck you. And you're like, wait, this is nice? This is the nice guy?
Yeah, you're like, you're not nice. That's,
well, so
that's
it's you. Funny. So I have, well, I think there's just two lines of thoughts, and then we need to go in down. We need to explore the narcissist or talk about the narcissist sociopath person, because I do a lot of work around that. But my friend had mentioned this because I talked to her about it. And it's really like, I think what's hard is she was saying that there are a lot of good men that become slighted because of the bad men. Like, and there's, and it's because some women are awful. Not what people are awful. Like, women can be cruel, and they can say, they can laugh in people's, like, they're women that will treat, like, all of us, like, they're just bad apples in the human race. So there's probably a bunch of men that have been, whether it's like attachment trauma related to their mom or their parents or whatever, or if it's, you know, someone rejected them or laughed in their face or they were bullied, right? Because a lot of the shooters have been bullied. And
yeah, like, awesome. Have you ever met a 13-year-old girl? Like, there's no one meaner in the awful world.
Yeah.
We're awful. I was awful. I mean, I talked about that on the Dry Life. Like, I was a fucking bully. And
oh, you were? I didn't know.
In middle school. And it was one of those things, like, I wasn't the Regina George, but I was, like, the Karen, like the non-dumb Karen. Like, I was guilty by association. Like, and it was what it felt like to me, I think, and not to validate at all, because I've reached out, I've apologized, like, I've attempted to make amends, but it felt like one of those, like, eat or be eaten. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a woman, I think, and all of us understand that, like,
yeah,
it's like a jungle, like, literally, like, it's like a Mean Girl scene,
right?
And it's like, will you either get in with them? Or, like, I literally just watched the new Pretty Little Liars, which is, like, all about this, how it's just, like, it's all about bullying. It's really good. Like, it's not kind of cheesy like the first one. It's on HBO Max. So it's kind of,
okay,
it's Pretty Little Liars, but, like, more, like, darker and, you know, more adult. But totally. I mean, I think when you look at anybody's story, like, even if, genetically they have something, you know, right, like, sociopathy or psychopathy, you know, or narcissistic personality disorder, there's still things that lead people up to do what they did. To the
extreme.
Exactly.
Totally. Like, if you are with narcissism, you literally, there are differences in your brain where you lack, like, activity in the amygdala, they've shown, which is like that, like the fear, like that they don't have that fear response, right? So they don't care. Like, they don't care about, like, breaking laws or doing unkind things. Like, they don't fear consequence. So that's why they will be, they do the things they do because they lack that empathy and that, that ability to have perspective, to engage in perspective taking. So, but I think there are things that lead up people up to that point where they're just like, they're done. Like they just, for whatever reason, whether it's their brain and their different brain chemistry, or well, where, whether it's just having a series of like, you know, interactions with a mean 13-year-old or even like a bad breakup, like people, you know, it can become they can internalize these things, right? And so I think that a lot of the backlash came from that. I got a lot of I got like probably 4 or 5 DMs that were like, stop posting shitty content. Like
following me then.
It was just like, it was wild. And I think I had to ground myself, be like, hey, like they clearly, and again, I also think too, we have this like Me Too feminist movement, which is wonderful. But then I think a lot of males do feel like they are being like put in this box and they're like, what did I do? And so that's privilege. Obviously, you know, we can talk, but there's also really, I think this challenge of men understanding the day to day, like strife as a woman. I really think that you, unless you are a woman, you can't understand it. Like same thing as like, I don't know if that makes sense. I just feel like some men just can't wrap their head around it. And if they've had like a bad interaction with a woman, they're like, well, women are bitches or can be complete assholes too. Yes, absolutely. But our country's built on this patriarchal society, right? Like values. So it's, yes, they're asshole women, but women have not been equal, are still not equal yet. And I don't think men recognize that all the time.
No. And I think system, like, yeah, you're right. The swing of the pendulum can go too far either way. And people pigeonhole people all the time. But I think really why I wanted to bring it up was to talk about like kind of how to recognize those kind of people in your life, how to stay away from them, how to leave them,
not engage with them
and not engage with them. Because for me personally, this is something I'm working on with my therapist, which it's not that I don't want to work on it. Cause like, but you know, I did like I redid my ACE score and I redid a bunch of stuff, and since we're doing the EMDR, mm-hmm. you know, we went and wrote down the list of all of my traumas. And I'm like, I need more paper. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot this. And what we're working on now is my relationship that I was in from, I think it was like 2015 to 2018. And we'll call him John. I was dating John, and I met him when I was still in active addiction, and he was another addict I didn't know. But I got into this relationship, and probably within 6 months, I had like no friends left because he completely isolated me, and either my friends were scared of him or the girls were scared of him, didn't like him. He would like text any guy friends I had and threaten them so they wouldn't talk to me. Mm-hmm. And then he would just, and no, he's also a meth addict. And I think that plays into it too, because and part of why I think I validated staying in the relationship when it was so toxic. And first it was just emotionally abusive, and then it became physically abusive later. Mm-hmm. But I just kept thinking like, oh, I can help this person, you know, because I got sober first, and then he got sober for a little bit, and then his brother committed suicide, and then he relapsed, and he's just been out ever since. But he's someone who I think it's the book. It's just a book called Fear. Mm. And I was reading it because I was really interested. I like go through phases and just in, you know, psychopathy in general. And it talks about that, right? Like what's really the difference between like altruistic people and like monks and like people who are psychotic mm-hmm. and practically like goes back to the amygdala and having a smaller amygdala or having one that, you know, doesn't activate as well or training it to. Like, it's crazy how these like monks in like the Eastern countries can do this. But anyways, there was a section that I remembered and it was basically comparing somebody who was a real sociopath or a real narcissist versus like antisocial personality disorder.
Yeah.
And they kind of compared it like to a, like a real snake, like a snake, like an evil snake. And then like a pit bull that has been like beaten.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And becomes mean, you know?
That hurts my heart, but I get it.
But that's how I always kind of thought and hoped he was the pit bull, but I think I eventually realized that he was a snake. Mm. And I have known other snakes too. I think when you're an addict, I mean, you run in not the greatest crowds. But only now am I I'm, you know, working to process a lot of the things he would do. Like he would leave me places, like literally, like I'd go in places and he'd be like, I'm gonna go get a cigarette. And then he would like disappear for like days. Even after our motorcycle accident, like this was one thing. And I think we got in a motorcycle accident and he was fine, but I was not wearing my gear that day, which was my bad. I've literally been riding a really long time. I was just hot. It was like 100 degrees and we weren't going far, but we got hit and he's a felon. Mm. So anyways, like he was kind of freaking out and acting weird. And I thought he told me he had some clean time. That was the reason that we were hanging out again, which was stupid because I could never tell anyways when he was high or when he wasn't. But I like burned the whole left side of my body, like from road rash. But I just remember like, he told me like, don't go in the ambulance. You don't need to go to the hospital. You're fine. So I'm just like sitting on the side of the road, like refusing for them to take me. So they like clean me up there. But then of course I have to go back days later because I get an infection and I actually have like broken my ankle and like all this stuff. And then anyways, like long story short, he had a gun on him, which he's not supposed to have as a felon, but for some reason, whatever, they took it. They didn't arrest him at that moment. And so we went back home and I just remember him in the Uber. He was like mad at me. Like it was my fault we got in the accident. Yeah. And then at one point he said to me, like, I should have just left you there. Like I should have gotten the bike and like left you there and you would have been fine. Like the ambulance would have came. Like, and they wouldn't, because they took his bike because he didn't actually have a fucking motorcycle license, you know? So it's like, God forbid, you know? And then of course, again, we finally get back and I'm just like sitting in bed in pain and he goes to have a cigarette and took my car and like left for days and didn't answer me. So I had no car, not that I could drive anyways, but it was just that. And that was like normal for me. And finally, like I left, but it took me a really, really long time to leave. It was really hard. I was scared. And then when I did finally leave, he assaulted me and tried to hurt me. Like the whole, if I can't have you, nobody can kind of moment. Thankfully, I was in a small studio apartment in Marina Del Rey and the walls were not very thick. But even after that, he would call me sometimes from jail or like reach out about stuff. And I just never realized how much it affected me. Like until I got out of this past relationship and I realized how much projection mm-hmm. I was doing on to this more recent relationship, how much distrust I have still in general. Mm-hmm. And for me too, how much it like wore off on me a little bit, like the violence and the tendency to be like emotionally abusive. It's almost like as if I became him a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's so bizarre because like, that's so not who I am as a person, but it's like having an out of body experience. And if I don't know if anybody, you know, listening has had kind of a similar experience. I know I've talked to a couple other women who have, but I'm realizing like, I'm never going to be able to have a healthy relationship. And I've never really had a healthy relationship, to be honest, because, you know, I was an addict before and then, you know, dating another addict, but I'm never going to be able to have a healthy relationship until I process this and until I don't react in this way, because I knew that it was still so real when I literally was getting my hair done for my birthday and I invited somebody to come with me to go out that night and stuff, and I texted him to just like confirm and he didn't respond right away, and the text didn't go through, and within like 10 minutes I was in like a total meltdown mode. I was like, oh my God, he ghosted me. I'm spending all this money. Like, you know, like I just literally freaked out. Yeah. And I get to the hairdresser and like within 10 minutes, he's like, hey, sorry, I was at the gym, didn't have service. But I was like, okay, like this is still like obviously a major issue. Yeah. I don't want to be like this.
It's hard. And something you mentioned, like you take on those qualities or maybe those patterns. It's hard when you're in those situations. And that's where a lot of the work I do with women that are like leaving these abusive relationships or like just these manipulative relationships with narcissists, they then sometimes there's like a lot of guilt and shame with how they're responding, but you become more and more like it escalates really quickly because you just want to be heard. And when you're trying to like prove your point and feel seen and like, you know, win the argument or like, be like, no, like take accountability. Like you're wrong. This hurt me, whatever. You just become more and more like aggravated because that person's never going to acknowledge like the pain that they inflicted. They're never going to take accountability. These folks that have these personality disorders, they're never going to see it. They literally, there's an absence of empathy. They cannot like see you as someone that's hurting and that their actions were the cause of it. They just cannot see it that way. And what's really hard is then, you know, if that's your partner and you're just trying to explain yourself and trying to like, again, like fight for yourself or defend yourself, you just, it's hard not to get combative and to get engage in that back and forth because you're just like, you want to shake them. Like, and so a lot of the work I do is like helping people also too, to kind of, yes, there's better ways of communicating for sure. And like in those relationships where you don't need to be combative and where you can feel seen and heard, you don't have to respond in a way that's that volatile, but it's real. It's like helping people understand like why that happened. That was like, essentially it's a survival skill. Like you're just trying to get through and like, I don't know, it becomes something that's like second nature. And even though it's not you, that's the status quo in the relationship where that they do something incredibly abusive or hurtful and then you react, and it's hard to really get out of that pattern when you've been there for so long and you just feel like you have to fight your way through this relationship. So it's hard not to like take on those qualities or like those communication skills, because it's like you don't know how else to navigate it, because for, you know, x amount of months or x amount of years you always had to like yell and kick and scream and like push, like physically push back or kick, or you know what I mean, like
absolutely. I think my therapist called it an anger protest, and I really liked that, because one of the things my current ex has asked of me, like moving forward, if we ever want to mend the relationship, we're obviously still friends and stuff, was like anger management, obviously. And I'm sitting here thinking like, I've literally done anger management my entire life and it's clearly not working. Like, you know, I know what to do, walk away, you know, breathe, I have all the tools and toolkit, but I think for anybody listening who has the issues, like it just, like you said, I think it's such a defense mechanism of like digression. And yeah, when I'm trying to communicate something, like a boundary has been broken, or I feel like I'm being disrespected and I cannot you're clearly not getting what I'm saying verbally. And that happened like throughout my relationship with John. You know, like you said, he just did not care. So that was the difference, right?
Yeah.
The way that I think a good metaphor to explain to people is, you know, when you give like the colorblind test, and a colorblind person like literally cannot see the color. So when you're talking about like red, they know, okay, there is a red. Other people see red, mm-hmm. but I don't know what red is.
Yeah.
I know about it, but I literally can't see it. And that's kind of how I have come to think about like people like that. They literally cannot feel fear. So they can't feel bad for you because they don't know how it feels to feel like that.
Yeah.
They don't know how it feels to feel scared mm-hmm. or that upset in that way for that reason. So
and they don't have that fear for consequences. Like if I say to my partner, they're going to leave me. They don't.
All right, cool.
Right. It's a mind fuck. Honestly, and I think it's just really hard to even recognize you're in it sometimes because it's, I don't know if we talked about this, I don't think on the podcast, but it's like that boiling frog syndrome.
No, what's that?
So like if you put a frog in boiling water, it jumps out. But if you put a frog in water and slowly turn up the heat, like it doesn't recognize.
Oh, it'll boil itself?
It'll just boil itself. So the idea is with those manipulative relationships, we call them pathological love relationships. It's usually that like slow boil where you don't know it's happening initially because usually there's some charm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very.
And obviously with addicts, there's a lot of lying. So you don't, like if you don't know, and especially if you don't know what, and like I have a lot of clients that then, yeah, they're, I mean, narcissistic personality, but then, or there's an addict and they don't know that people can lie that compulsively. Like they've never heard of it. Like they can't conceptualize that that's possible. So there's like that charm and you're kind of like, okay. And you like get to know this person, then slowly they might be like a little bit more jealous or possessive. And you're like, well, that's kind of cute because like, you know, they care. And then they will become more and more like isolating. Like, I don't like you hanging out with this person. I don't like you talking to this guy. And then it can just, again, it just escalates. And it's hard when it's so slow because you still feel so connected to this person.
Oh, absolutely. I felt like exactly what you said. The jealousy is kind of, and I think it's only romantic for those of us who've never, like, my parents were divorced when I was young. My dad has been married 3 times. My mom is not in a healthy relationship. So I don't really have any idea what that looks like, to be honest. Like, and I don't think I've ever been in a healthy relationship. So what I romanticize or what I think is romantic is probably not necessarily healthy, right? Yeah. And like you said, okay, it's cute at first, but then when they're sending people text, or I'd have people blocked in my phone, like without my consent or him showing up places. Like he even once, and now we can laugh about it, but obviously it wasn't funny at the time. This past relationship ex, we were like Snapchatting, like not even anything bad. And John found out and he went and slashed his tires like in the middle of the night. And we were living in LA and the other guy lives all the way in Orange County. Like just, and I'm like, how do you know where he lives?
And then with these personalities, they like say it's your fault. Like, well, like, why are you talking
to him? Why are you talking to him? And then I'm in the middle of it. And that, yeah, I felt trapped in so many ways. Cause I felt like, and this is something I also realized later on was part of me felt like I was obligated to stay in the relationship because for me, like I had gotten sober and I was like codependent on the relationship and was so hyper-focused on helping him and not working on myself. And I was convinced in my mind for some reason that if I could love him and if I could save him and make this relationship work, that somehow I'm worthy of love. Like I saw this reflection of myself and I just thought, if I can't make this work, then I'm never going to find somebody because we're the same. You know, like I saw so much of my old self in him, and I just, this was like my chance to redeem that old version of me that is the villain in a lot of people's stories.
Yeah.
So, and then it just kept getting worse and worse and physically violent. And to this point where, you know, people wouldn't hang out with me. I had people warning me, like I totally could have ended up in a trunk, like not even kidding. And so, I can't even now imagine, you know, looking at that kind of a relationship and even allowing myself to get in it. But I think one of the problems, and like you said, is it's really hard to know if a person is like that in the beginning, because they hide it really well. But I do think there are red flags that we can look out for.
Yeah.
And I think obviously you as a clinician, like what would you say are kind of things to look for? Like man, woman, doesn't matter. Yeah. Like just in a person, if you're dating somebody and you kind of are just getting like a weird vibe.
A few things. I think you mentioned this last time or the time before our last conversation, but like mirroring everything you do, like they try to come on as like, you and I are exactly the same. We have the same interests. We have the same values. Like we are perfect because we are the same person. So they'll be like, I also love dogs. Like, you know, I also like love my family, and they'll just try to relate, but it's like, it seems almost like too good to be true. If that makes sense. So like when they try to mirror you, and like, that's a way they align and that's a way they hook. Cause you become so like, in awe that there's this person that's like fits your life so perfectly. That's what they do. Cause it's a way it's an easy, right. It's easy to just slide into this person's life. If you share the exact same values, if you do the exact same things, if you like, if you want the same thing. So they'll say, yeah, I want like a family and kids. Like I want all the things you want. They'll say that. And then they'll creep in. Like it's really sneaky, but it's hard when you maybe have dated for a while, or like maybe you haven't witnessed a healthy relationship and this person's just, it seems too good to be true, but you're like, wow, it's like so great. Like all the things I could have wanted are right here in front of me. So, that was my first thought. And the second thought I had was the love bombing comes on early. So that's part of the abuse, the cycle of abuse, but they'll do it early on. They will like lay it on thick. They will, like whether it's expressing deep feelings for you right away, whether it's like gifting you lots of things, whether it's complimenting you, like just excessively, again, not like just normal, like you look nice tonight, but it's like, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. I can't believe we've never met before. I feel like my whole world has changed now. Like, I think we're soulmates. Like, and while that seems wild for a lot of people, it feels so good, especially if you haven't been in a relationship for a while or ever, or maybe you haven't experienced love and you're like, wow, like this is like,
yeah, so nice.
Yeah. And then oftentimes that enthusiasm, you'll kind of match it because they're like so sure of it and you're like, wow. And so even if you have this thought like, like, I don't know if I love them yet, you're like, but this is amazing. Like they love me and they've barely known me. And so like, why wouldn't I love this person? I feel like that's like what happens in The Bachelor, honestly. Like, I feel like it's just like, well, I mean, kind of, but like this idea of like someone will lay it on thick and you'll just kind of feel so good about it. And you'll just like reciprocate just because you're like, wow, like this feels nice to like express ourselves in this way so soon.
It's like fake vulnerability. And so then you open your real vulnerability to them. I've had conversations like, I remember this one guy I went on a Bumble date with. I met him on Bumble, and it was like the first time he was like, I really like phone calls instead of texts, which I was like, oh, that's really like, that's nice. Like, you know, that's a refreshing. Yeah. We talked for like 3 hours the first time. Like I should have known that was weird. Right. And I did. And the relationship did not last long, and I cut it off. And then he sent me a creepy text from like a burner phone afterwards. And somebody anonymously left like a bad review on my Google business.
Oh
like,
my gosh.
You know what I mean? It was like so obvious that it was him, but I was just like, oh my God, like, I'm so glad that I now know what the signs look like. But yeah, totally with the love bombing. And I didn't even know what that word was until recently. One of my girlfriends used it and I was like, well, maybe I've just been like not single for so long. Like, what does that mean?
But you also mentioned the faux vulnerability, which is also part of the love bombing or like a manipulative tactic. Cause like, if you share like, oh, like this is my childhood trauma, I've overcome so much, I'm in therapy, I'm working on it. Like, and it kind of makes you open up, and they do that as a means of like getting in there, knowing your weaknesses, knowing the things you struggle with, knowing your triggers, and then they can use them. And I know it's like, it's really sad, but it's so, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, there's so much tactic that goes, like, it's just so intentional. And you don't know that all the time because you're like, they're asking about me. They want to know about my trauma. Like, that's so great. But like in the first like couple dates, like that takes time. Like, it's good to be vulnerable, but you should not have to tell someone about like an assault or, you know, a traumatic experience, whatever it is. Like, you should not have to feel like you have to, like you have to, like you owe this person that, or that like they, it's like, you know, they showed me there, so I'm going to show them mine. Like, it's not a game, but I think there's oftentimes this need to like disclose because they feel like, well, this person opened up, but that can become really sticky.
Oh yeah. One, I've had it. The thing is that I've had both in romantic and non-romantic relationships too. So it's not even just in romance. No, like I've had friendships like that too. That
work relationships.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Well, they're trying to like, and I think too, what's hard in those situations, like say you're like, we've talked about like, you're lonely or like you're new to a new area. You like want to build connection. It's hard sometimes not to want to like have these deep friendships or like connect with someone at work. Cause you're like, that sounds really nice. Like I need an ally. Like I need a friend. And then you kind of go, it goes, it's just like, it's, it goes from 0 to 100 really fast. And that's not a healthy way for any type of relationship at all.
No, not at all. I think if I learned anything now at 30, the best relationships out of the ones I have had that are semi-healthy have been people I've gotten to know first as like friends, mm-hmm. or friends of friends, and then dated, mm-hmm. and taken things slower and not also like, right, like all of a sudden we're going to hang out and then, you know, sleep together on the first night. And then I'm going to spend the whole weekend at your house. I feel like that's like another form of love bombing too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, let's just keep spending time together. Like, we'll go get more stuff from your apartment, or like, you know, I had one guy, like, let's go buy clothes.
Yeah. Which I'm
like, okay, that sounds great. But you know,
like, but at what cost? And they're like,
exactly, but what will I ever go home? But I think what's even harder than is once you're in it.
Yeah.
And is leaving is really hard because I would have people constantly, like, especially, you know, my friends, my family, and people being like, just leave him. I'm like, literally, he makes it impossible. Like, I remember even when we weren't together, I would go back to the town that we met in because I have family there. And I think I had him blocked, but of course, like, he would make, you know, fake Instagrams and things like that. And he would find out that I was there. And I knew that he knew I was there because everyone would be sleeping. And I would wake up to the sound of like a revving motorcycle engine outside of the house, like him letting me know that he knows that I'm there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so what I realized and the way that I did it was obviously, you know, more extreme. Like I let things go too far but I wasn't with him when the assault happened. Like I had left him by then, but how I tried to leave was just very slowly.
Yeah.
Like without kind of dropping everything and going. Cause like, he knew where I lived. He knew.
Yeah.
You know, everything, I think. And I found out eventually, like he had my Apple ID on his phone too. So like, that's where he kept knowing where I was all the time. So I was like, how does this motherfucker know? I'm like literally at an Al-Anon meeting for him and he's showing up. I'm like, you can't be here. I'm trying to like help me help you. But I had to do all this stuff. Like I had to change my phone number. I had to get off all social media, like actually, not like, oh, I'm going to make a Finsta. Like, no, like literally I had no social media. I moved, like, so he didn't know where I lived. And I like cut all ties, like really, because I think sometimes we think we cut all ties, but we leave a door open a little bit.
Right.
You know, because maybe there's like a hope that they'll change.
Right.
Or like, I'm really leaving. And so this is my final straw, you know,
right.
But like, no, like they're not going to change. They're just going to pretend that they changed and things will just like get worse. Like they've never, I've literally watched family members go through this. I've gone through this. I've never seen somebody who was in a relationship with a narcissist get better.
And that's like, what I tell clients all the time. I'm pretty transparent. Like usually takes a while. I have to build rapport and they'll like, trust me. And I'm like, this is literally a difference in brain, like brain chemistry and just activity. So there's really, this is not up to you. There's nobody who can fix this person. There's no one who can make them better. It's not going to be you. It's not going to be anyone else. I think what's hard too, is when you see them with someone else, that happens a lot where then they see them date someone else. Like, well, like someone else like is with them. Like they found someone else. I'm like, there, it's cause it's another source. Like it's another energy source. It can be another source of income. It can be another
victim.
Source.
That's not
right. Right.
That's what that is.
And it's just like an endless cycle. So if it's not you, it's going to be someone else. And it's not because like anything that you're unlovable. It's like this person just feeds off of other people in their lives. And it's not something that can ever really, like, again, you can't change it. I think that's the hardest part for clients to understand. And also too, it's like, it can cause a lot of embarrassment and shame for a lot of people. They're like, how did I get here? But there's so many successful, intelligent, driven, hardworking, like, it doesn't matter. Like I've seen all women, not all like, but like I've seen all women from all walks of life find themselves in these, and not women, just not just women, men, non-binary, like humans find themselves in this. You don't think it's ever going to happen to you. And there are red flags to look for if you're not familiar. Right. But I think too, something to know is that they prey on folks that are very empathic, like people that really care deeply about like, I don't know, just other people's well-being, which is a lot of people, but those people that like are overgiving and over nurturing, and they know that if they show up with a trauma history, or they, you know, like kind of like you said, it's there may be the snake, but they're pretending that they're the pit bull that's been beaten.
Yeah. I think that's the hardest realization.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so important to even, if you're not ready to leave, like it reminds me of Big Little Lies, right? Nicole Kidman's character.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, and maybe even right, like there are times when you are verbally abusive or you're physically abusive, but once again, we kind of explained where that comes from, right? Mm-hmm. So starting to prepare yourself for what to do and how to leave and how to, you know, where's a safe place that you can go,
mm-hmm.
you know, get ready to, you know, change your number, have a backup phone with a different number. That way, once you left, you can shut off one number and have the other number. Don't go just give it out to everybody, you know, only give it to certain people who you trust and people who are not going to give it to that person, you know,
mm-hmm.
let other people know what's going on. You know, like I had to set myself up to like ruin him in everybody else's eyes. And I even did it subconsciously to a point where, like you said, I was so kind of embarrassed to be in that kind of relationship that it forced me to leave more, because if everybody knew what was going on, my integrity,
right,
kind of shaken,
right,
by keep continuing to go back to him. So I gained confidence that way too, by starting to be, in the beginning, I was very like, I want to protect this relationship. I'm loyal to him. Towards the end, I was able to have more loyalty to myself and start to just be open with more people about what was going on, and them, you know, validating my feelings, validating my side, you know, gave me more confidence to be like, all right, this is not something I want to be in. This is, I do need to leave. This mm-hmm. is, you know, I want to go have fun with people and, you know, doing those things that I wasn't allowed, quote unquote, to do mm-hmm. in that relationship. And that helped motivate me, rather than, you know, just kind of sitting around and allowing the cycle to continue or hoping that they'll change, you know, or waiting for things to get worse. Cause that's just, from my experience, like it just got worse. It didn't.
It only gets worse. I have not seen it with someone who truly is narcissistic or has sociopathic qualities. I have not seen it change.
No. And it's amazing how much support there is out there. Yeah. And then I think like what I'm doing and what I wish I had done earlier is just making sure after you leave to really focus on yourself. Like I did focus on myself. Like I didn't date for a long time, but I also didn't really focus on like processing the relationship. Like I finally was able to focus on my own sobriety because by then I had like a year and a half or 2 years of sobriety, but I was never really in recovery. Like at that point it was just abstinence because yeah. I was so focused on this other relationship and I was still doing bad things with this person. Mm-hmm. But when I finally was able to leave, I was finally able to actually like that was kind of my first year of real recovery and start processing my emotions and, you know, all the stuff that comes with your first year of sobriety, which is totally like a roller coaster. But now finally, I think after being in another long-term relationship and realizing how much work I still have to do because of that relationship, I think my word of advice would just be, you know, wait and do the work on yourself and process it and gain your self-value back and gain your confidence back and gain your independence back. Because I think that I thought I had some of those things and I did, but on like, it was like layered.
Yeah. You know?
So yeah. When like COVID hit and when things got bad, I think for all of us, like it seeped back in and all of a sudden all this stuff surfaced for me that I thought was gone because there was time in between it. But just because there's time doesn't necessarily mean you've processed it. And it goes back to, you know, the book that we had recommended before and my therapist recommended. So I finally bought it, which is The Body Keeps a Score. Mm-hmm. And just reminding yourself, like, you might not actually remember it, but your body will.
Totally.
And like, I completely like melted down at the end of COVID, like, and that led to the meltdown of my relationship because I just could not function. And so thankfully for me, the person I was in a relationship with recently, we're very close still. We've been close for a long time. So we're working on how do we get back to what we had before or how do we get back to that? But that first, before anything, it starts with both of us working on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that means I'm reading a lot. I'm doing my therapy. I'm focusing on me.
It sounds like you're like doing it for you because you're noticing how it impacts you on a regular basis. Like, and I think that's important that you're doing it for you and in hopes that like that we can, like that you can reconnect and that you can get back to where, you know, you can be with this person. But it's like that intrinsic motivation. It sounds like you're like, I'm just ready to get through this shit. Like I'm ready to actually work through it and be free of it. Yeah.
Because even that, I don't even want to call it fake confidence or value. Because I think like when I was living in LA afterwards, whatever that independence that I did have, like that was so good. And I really loved it. And I loved being that person.
Yeah.
And so I want to get back to that. And I'm excited to be able to, but to know that it's not just a surface level this time, that I'm really digging out the roots and that moving forward, it's real. And so we'll be adding some resources to the episode description. Specifically if you think that you're potentially in a relationship, maybe you're entering one, maybe you're leaving one.
Or maybe you're like, maybe I was in one and I didn't even know it.
Exactly. Maybe you're just realizing like, oh shit, this sounds like so-and-so. You know, we're here for you. Our DMs are always open. Our emails are always open. And I know Leah, you run a support group, right?
It's on pause.
It's on pause currently.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We'll talk more about it and it'll be on if you follow her on Instagram.
Yeah.
But once again, we'll be putting other resources, other support groups, other places. There's always, I think we can end on this, which is really important in this other book that I'm reading now, is we always have a choice. Like, remember that, like that's an action and you may feel powerless, but you still have a choice. to leave or to not get into it, remember that, like, you not that hasn't been taken away from you, even if you feel like it has.
Well said.
Thank you.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Generation Dry, a podcast for the sober and sober curious. If you like what you've been listening to, make sure to subscribe and leave us a review. For more information about this episode, you can check out the description. And for more techniques and tips, make sure to follow us on Instagram @GenerationDryPod. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next week.